Okay, so I want to start with a little talk about a little motivation behind the project I'm going to be talking about, which is Eclair.js. So I think that one of the things that's happened in the last several years, especially in the business and the enterprise, is that web application development has moved away from some of the traditional programming languages such as Java, the platforms that go with it, like J2EE, to more, how should we say, nimble application development languages and platforms like Node.js and JavaScript. There are a number of reasons, I think, for this shift. One is that the JavaScript environments, especially Node.js, they're relatively simple compared to something like J2EE. They're also very rich. So the package manager for Node, for example, which is what you access with an NPM command, actually accesses the NPM repository, which by some counts has the largest number of open source packages or modules in it than compared to any other package manager anywhere else. So it's clearly a very rich environment. It's relatively simple. The other advantage, of course, that Node.js brings to the table is that it scales very well. Okay, but it scales horizontally, my term, in the sense that a Node server can accept very, very large numbers, tens of thousands of requests at a time. But of course, there's a trade-off here. It can accept all those requests, but it doesn't actually do the compute on those requests. Okay, so it's going to farm those out. It's going to send those requests somewhere else to some back-end engine, which is going to take care of the compute. And any sort of heavy-duty compute is delegated to some back-end engine. So part of my premise here is that Apache Spark is an ideal engine to receive those requests, to do those computations. I find Spark is interesting from a number of different points of view. One of it is that it's optimized for several different types of function. So in addition to being able to just do straight coding, I also have access to a SQL engine. I can operate on both static and streaming data. I have machine learning libraries, and I can represent my my data in a graph form, so I can do model social networks, and I can apply, in fact, machine learning to those networks, and I can do all that at scale, and I can, in fact, pretty much dynamically scale the compute that I can bring to bear on any of those types of data. From an IT point of view, this is really attractive because rather than having to manage a separate SQL database, a streaming engine, a graph database, et cetera, all separately, I can manage one environment which will accommodate all those different types of functionality in one place. That's a huge saving in terms of TCO for any sort of administration or IT. Of course, Spark is very performant, so it has parallelized operations in the same sort of vein as Hadoop, right? I'm going to farm out my computation across a cluster of compute nodes, and the thing that really makes Spark fast is that I do most of those computations in memory or as much as possible, compared to Hadoop, where every operation was sort of bracketed with a read-write from disk. And also from a development point of view, because of that scalability, the application that I can write on my laptop against, say, a very simple single-node Spark instance will also scale up, in terms of my application code, certainly, to a very large cluster. So that makes it attractive from a development point of view. So we have Spark, which I'll say is a good candidate for a back-end compute engine for Node. And we have Node, which is probably the most popular platform at the moment for building web applications. So that was the motivation for Eclair.js, because Spark has APIs in Scala, Java, Python, and to a certain extent in R, but not for JavaScript. So if I want to code against Spark, from my Node.js platform. There is currently no native API that enables me to do it. And that is the motivation behind the project I'm going to be talking about, which is Eclair.js. Somebody asked me, Eclair.js, Eclair. So I have very sort of dim memories of French in high school. So Eclair, as I remember, is Lightning, Spark, JS. So you can do the, you can make the leap there. Okay, so if I was going to go about creating an API to Spark from JavaScript and from Node, what would my requirements be? Well, I think they're basically boiled down to three general areas. One would be sort of the area of simplicity. As I said, Node and JavaScript are relatively simple compared to their legacy competitors. We clearly also want to enable all the Spark functionality we could, and we also need to do DB performant. So in terms of simplicity, you know, in the Node environment, and since many of you seem to be familiar with Node, you know, I want to be able to just do my npm install Eclair.js. Okay, don't want to have some special kind of incantation to make Eclair.js work. And likewise, in the actual code itself, I just want to be able to do require Eclair.js. I'd like to have a uniform coding style. So if I'm going to actually write applications that work against Spark, I don't want to have special code blocks that have to be sort of separated out from my regular JavaScript code. I'd like it to be all the code to be sort of cut from the same fabric. And I'd also like to have a separation of concerns. Right, Spark is a big data server, right? And Node is it's not big data, but maybe it's big network sort of server. And I'd like to be able to have a separation of concerns here. So I think that's going to be an important requirement in terms of simplicity. I don't want to have to be, you know, writing in amongst the GORP of Spark when I write my Node application. I think it goes without saying that one would want to be able to enable all the Spark functionality that I can. And I'll say that I think we do fairly well on this just up front. So we support support most of the SQL operators in Spark, most of the streaming, most of the machine learning. We currently do not support any of the graph capabilities in Spark. But it is a community, an open source community. I'll talk a little bit more about at the end. So you can help fix that if that's of interest to you. And the last area is needs to be performant. So within Spark itself, you know, Spark is written, I believe, in Scala. So it's a JVM based system. So clearly the existing Scala and Java APIs for Spark perform well. The PySpark API is of an out of process. It's an out of JVM kind of setup, so that you have to have a lot of crosstalk between the JVM and the Python interpreter in order to make PySpark work. So if you look at the performance compared between, for example, Scala or Java and Python in Spark, you'll find that the JVM-based languages win out quite handily. And that's not surprising. And finally, in terms of requirements, what we'd like to be able to support for a Node JavaScript API would be to support interactive applications. So Spark today has a Spark Submit API, and the style of usage of that is that you build your application, you bundle it up into a jar, and then you throw it at Spark Submit. Right? It's a very batch-oriented kind of style of application design and deployment. Node applications, on the other hand, typically are very sort of front-facing, user-centric, so there's a lot more interaction. So you'd like to be able to support that style of interaction in your application, right, compared to the sort of the toss the jar over the wall kind of style. It's not to say that we necessarily want Spark to handle every user mouse button click, but we'd like to be sort of towards that end of the spectrum rather than the sort of the batch end of the spectrum. Okay, so those are what I would consider to be the sort of the requirements, and they're the ones that that the Eclair.js team sort of had in mind when they went about designing this this project. So let me just like going to give you the kind of the getting started demo, just to convince you this is real, and just to show you how simple it is to get going. So I'm just going to drop out of the presentation here. Hopefully everything is still running. Okay, so as you know, if I hit node on the command line, I will get a prompt, right? Slight sort of, you know, the cardiac rate goes up there slightly for the presenter at that point in time. And I can then, you know, I now have a JavaScript, or at least I have a node. See if I get that right. I have a command line which will evaluate JavaScript. Okay. So, but you know that already. So how do we bring in, how do we start working with Spark? So I should tell you at the back end is actually that other tab on this command line here. Up top on the left, I have a Docker container running, which has a single node instance of Spark running. There's a bunch of defaults I've gotten set up already, but I can talk to that directly. So I've got Spark, and I have my JavaScript node command line here. So let's see if we can get something happening in Spark. All right, so first thing I have to do is I've just got to bring in the... I'm going to cheat a little bit. My typing is really not that accurate. Okay, so I'm going to bring in Eclair.js. I'm now going to create an instance of an Eclair.js client. Okay, undefined is not an error. If you do this with JavaScript, you'll get something more meaningful back. If you're running the node command line, you get undefined. Okay, so now I've now created an instance of the Eclair.js client, but now what I need to do is I need to create a session in Spark. Okay, so this is actually kind of the process space in which my variables get evaluated, my processes run. Session also is a Spark 2.0 concept. It used to be context, where Eclair.js is fairly up to date, so we have session here. Okay, so we're creating a session, and you see that we have now just created a WebSocket. Okay, and the WebSocket is actually the communication mechanism between my node application and my backend Spark. That's how the two things are going to talk to each other. Okay, so that's why you see the WebSocket has been created. Okay, so now we have created a session, and we're connected up to it. So let's just do something. Let's do something pretty simple. So let us create essentially a list, and I'm going to create a list of just five numbers: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to parallelize it. If I was running this on a distributed multi-node cluster, you know, each of those numbers would get sprayed out to the different across the nodes, and now let's go over to here just to convince you that what I actually have is kind of real here. So this is my UI into my Spark cluster of one. This is the job view, and you can see that I've added what's called a driver program. So that's actually my another piece of my Eclair.js running next to Spark that has been registered with Spark. So that's now appeared. But you see there's nothing's actually happened. Okay, we've created this array. Actually, we haven't, but we're getting there. Okay, we haven't actually told Spark to do any work yet, so the job controller doesn't actually show you anything yet. Okay, so now I'm going to apply a map function to that array, to that list, rather. Okay, and I'm simply going to add one to every number, and then I'm going to print the results back to the console. Okay, so it would help if I pasted it in. Now you'll see there's a slight pause between when I hit return and when the results come back, and you should pay attention to the message that comes back. There it is. So that function returns a promise. Okay, so that if you're no JavaScript programmers, you should be familiar with promises. I'll talk a little bit more about this sort of the promise mechanism in Eclair.js and Java. I'm sorry, and Spark, and how those two work out. But we are working in sort of real Node JavaScript land. We have promises, and we get our results back. And if we go back to our job monitor here, you'll see that we kicked off and finished one task. Very simple, okay? But it's all basically there. Okay, so that's my getting started. So let me go back and tell you a little bit more about some of the other semantics of what it means to write Eclair.js. If I go back to play, I think that works. Okay, so I have a code snippet here, which is essentially the hello world example for Spark. It's counting the number of words in a file. I won't go through this in any great detail. I'll give you the general flow of it. So I'm going to read in a file. I'm going to divide all the words up, all the items in the file by space separator. I'm going to remove all of the words of zero length. I'm going to, for every word, I'm going to create a pair, a tuple. And the key value, the key is going to just be the word, and the value is simply going to be one. Then I'm going to do a reduce step. So I'm going to take all of the pairs that have the same key value. I'm just going to add up all those ones. Okay, it's a standard Spark reduce function. Then I'm going to flip the key and the value around. Okay, so now I have the key is the number, is the count at this point, and the value is the word. That's the map to pair function. Oh, I don't have a cursor. That's RDD6. I'm going to sort. Okay, so I'm going to sort from most frequent to least frequent. And then at the end, I'm going to just print out the top 10. That's the take 10. So the top 10, the first 10 items in that list. Okay, so pretty straightforward. So what is there to know if you're writing this as JavaScript? Because this is actually a piece of JavaScript. Okay, so the first thing is that if you remember Spark, the RDDs in Spark are immutable. Okay, so once I've created an RDD, I can't actually modify that value. I can blow it away and I can replace it with something else, but I can't modify it. The RDDs are immutable. So actually the same applies here in JavaScript. I've called them all RDDs, I didn't have to, but it's for the purposes of explanation. So if I actually try and modify one of those RDDs in the code here, it is actually a JavaScript variable, but it's backed by an RDD. So if I try and modify the value of one of these RDDs, you'll actually get an error. Okay, and that's simply because we're sort of mirroring the type data system back in Spark. Okay, so there's one sort of difference in semantics. Second, you'll see all of these various operators like filter, flat map, reduce by key. Eclair.js maps all of the Spark operators. So all of those operators there, map to pair, et cetera, these are all available in Eclair.js in JavaScript, but they map one-to-one to the operators that you'll see in the Spark API. you go through the Spark API, you'll find map to pair averages by key. It's a one-to-one mapping. Another thing to notice here, which is a very common usage in JavaScript, is that we have Lambda functions, or anonymous functions, as they're also called. So if you look at the functions like reduce by key, map to pair, they all take as an argument a function. Now, the interesting thing in Spark is that those functions, they are distributed. So when that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 gets pushed out to the nodes in my cluster, an operation like map is going to work out on those distributed nodes. Okay, so the Lambda functions, the anonymous functions here, they're written in JavaScript and they run at the nodes. Okay, so this is JavaScript sort of at the top level, and all the way down into the anonymous functions that run in the distributed system. So it's JavaScript sort of top to bottom. You'll notice that in those anonymous functions, there's this extra argument for, well, some of these anonymous functions. So the map to pair, for example, takes this extra argument. It's in the list, spark.tuple2. And there's a couple of different situations where you need to do that. And this is a kind of a, this is maybe the one oddity in the syntax. I said at the beginning, one of our requirements was that we should make it appear to be just sort of normal JavaScript node syntax. This is probably maybe one of the oddities. This is probably the most common oddity. So if you want to create a new instance of a Spark class inside an anonymous function, you have to pass that class into the anonymous function. And the reason to do that has to do with the fact that you are distributing these functions out within your cluster. So we had the choices when we were designing Eclair.js, either to send the entire type system mapping over to every node, or to do it rather more dynamically. And we landed on this as the most performant. So if you need to create an instance of a Spark class inside an anonymous function, you have to just list it as an argument, and then it gets sent out dynamically. It's maybe not the cleanest design, but it's just kind of the way it worked out. And the last point here is to do with promises and actions and transformations. So Spark has lazy evaluation. So when I created my list, which I parallelized, so all that Spark did was it created it's starting to build up a DAG, right? It's list of operations for execution at a later date, and it actually optimizes that DAG. That's one of the good things that Spark does. It helps us performance. and actually ties in very well with JavaScript's notion of promises, okay? Because nothing's actually happened. And a promise is, you know, we'll give you the result when we've computed it. So it actually fits very well together. Every time you have a so-called Spark transformation, okay, so these are things like map to pair, those operators, those are all transformations. They just build up the DAG. And all we do in the node, the JavaScript, is we pass back a promise. Okay. At some point, you're going to tell Spark to actually execute the DAG, right? That's an action operator, and take, that last one, the take 10 at the bottom there, is an action operator. And at that point, you're going to get data back. And so in the JavaScript code, you want to catch that, right? You want to do something with it. So then is the node operator, it's a node function, right, which takes two arguments. It tells the system what to do on success when a promise is fulfilled and what to do on failure. Of course, this is always going to succeed, so I only pass it one function, which is what to do when it returns. So that is why you saw the promise come back, right? That was that was when the action operator was completed, and then the then function kicked in when the promise was actually fulfilled, and then it printed out the list. So I think that the promise and the action transformation So operations actually blend together very well in the code. I don't find anything particularly jarring about this juxtaposition of promises and actions and transformations. Now, I hope you would agree. Okay, so that was a fairly simple, well, that was a simple in the sense that that really wasn't a web application. So I thought we'd just sort of dive for a couple of minutes into, so how do you actually build a web application using Eclair.js? So I'm going to reuse, essentially, the word count. I'm going to put a web front end on it. So let's go back here. Okay, so this time I'm going to run an application, app.js. Okay, let's see if we start the WebSocket again. And I am going to, there's my web application front end. So all I've done is I've put a button on a web page, right? And when I push the button, I'm going to kick off that word count. Okay, very simple, but just to illustrate the effect. So when I hit count there, you'll see that over on the right-hand side, we received a little piece of JSON. There's a property called start count, and the value was received true. Okay, and you see that we counted the words. This is in Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. Unfortunately, I forgot to take out the stop words, so now you know why we take out stop words, but those are the top 10 appearing most frequent words in the speech. Not sure that Martin would be very interested in the word of appears 35 times, but so be it. Okay, so you know, there's a very simple kind of web application, but using that Spark back end. So how do we do that? Well, the answer is actually quite straightforward. At the back there, is that at least semi-legible? Okay, thank you. So I've extracted the code out here from that application. Top left in the dash line box, that is the JavaScript that runs in the browser, and the code on the right and at the bottom left are two files that run in, they're part of the Node application, so they're running as part of Node.js, okay? And then again, we still have that Docker container running at the back, running Spark. Okay, so what happens at the beginning? So you'll see at point zero in the browser, I'm just when I create the window, I create a WebSocket. And similarly at the back end, sort of top right, unfortunately I don't have a pointer. Top right, you'll see in that code the first thing that happens is we create a WebSocket server. Okay? So that's the WebSocket you keep seeing in all of the previous bits of demo. Okay, so then top left again, I have a piece of JavaScript function called ClickMe, which is executed when I hit that button. And all that does is it sends a piece of JSON down the WebSocket, and the piece of JSON is simply that start count value is true. Right, so it sends that down. That gets caught on the right-hand side along that line, that arrowed line, one. And the catcher there says if we receive a message and it's not null, and the value of the JSON property start count is true, then call another function called start count. Okay, so on the right-hand side, there's my function start count. And it actually calls another function, which is wcount, and we're going to start that. And we pass it one function. That's the function that takes raw data as its only argument. That is a callback function. Okay, so standard Node kind of syntax and usage here. Okay, and so that callback function simply tells the system what to do when it returns a result. So if we follow line two, when we get the start call, on that wcount function. We've got nested functions and nested functions. There's always the trouble with explaining node code, we have another function, start count. And underneath there, bottom left, you'll see the snippet of the word count example that I just gave. Okay, we start out, we read in a file, we split it up by the separator space, and then at the end we have the RDD take 10, and then what do we do with those top 10? We call the callback function. And the callback function, which is at the end of arrow 3, it simply says we're going to create a list, and for each function on the list, we are going to push it back up on that WebSocket back to the browser, which gets caught at the end of arrow line number 4, and all it does is it prints out on the browser screen, right, all the top 10 most frequent words. So that's it. So, you know, I have to say, when I wrote this example, I went, well, that's really cool. And then I thought, it's just a standard piece of node programming. And I thought, well, that's the point, right? I mean, so we have invoked Spark. We did, you know, we did a 100K file, right? But it could have just as well been a petabyte. And this code would have, it just looks like a node program, right? There's nothing very spectacular about it. I can tell you that if I had wanted to stream that data back, if for example, I'd had a destream, a Spark destream, and I was doing some operation on that destream, there's a common usage in Spark, which is the for each operator in Spark, which I can use to operate on a destream. So, you know, DStream has the data coming in continuously. I can do window operations, I can do transformations, etc. The Eclair.js version of for each actually is smart in the sense that it knows that it's dealing with a DStream, so it automatically will funnel the results of that into a WebSocket. It's expecting a WebSocket, right? So that will flow back to the node server, which you can then, I mean, at that point, it's very standard for node applications to be able to stream data. You know, they're continuously updating, you know, stock ticker or flight map or whatever on the screen. That's standard stuff for a node application. So streaming is actually very easily accommodated in the system. Okay. So I could take a slight detour now just to tell you a little bit more about how this works. So on the right-hand side, in my diagram, so I have my web browser, it's talking HTTP and WebSocket to my node server running my node application. There is an Eclair.js client that's running there. That is the target of my NPM install. That is the target of my require Eclair.js. That's talking WebSockets back to the back end. In this case, it's going back to a Jupyter kernel gateway, or it could be a Jupyter notebook server, which in turn talks through the IPython protocol back to a so-called Jupyter kernel. Now, the kernel that we're using in this case is actually an Apache project. It's the Apache Tori kernel. It's in, Tori is in the incubation at the moment. And as part of that, the Eclair.js server kernels have what are called interpreters. And so the Eclair.js server is actually the interpreter for Tori, but it's the piece that actually talks directly into Spark. So if you're familiar with the architecture of Spark, they have the notion of a driver program, okay? And so in the case of Eclair.js, the Apache Tori is the driver program. So that's a long-running process, okay? It's how we can achieve interactivity with Spark, right? So we have this application that's long running. We talk to it through the IPython protocol, right, and then up to our Node application, okay. But we keep all those pipes open. In the server, we're using Eclair.js is actually mapping the JavaScript into the sort of the Java API of Spark using the Nashorn JavaScript engine, which is available in Java version 8. Okay, so we are running completely in the JVM. There's no adder process processing here. There's a lot, as you can see, there's a lot of support here being provided by the Jupyter infrastructure. Jupyter Foundation was originally set up to support Jupyter notebooks. Who here is familiar with, it was probably Zeppelin is the Apache version, but Jupyter was kind of the original. Are you, anyone here familiar with notebooks? And okay, a few people. All right, so the Jupyter framework with the kernel gateway and the kernels was really set up to support notebooks. Okay, so the protocol, for example, is set up to really for these interactive applications. Notebooks are very, very interactive. I'll show you an example in just a second. So that IPython protocol actually holds, I think there are 5 communication channels open at a time, which are used for handling errors, which are used for handling data. One of them is actually a TCP socket, so it will stream data, and that's actually one of the ways that we can handle streaming with Eclair.js from Spark directly. And then the kernel gateway itself, it essentially multiplexes those 5 channels into a single WebSocket, which then talks back up to the Eclair.js client. So we ride heavily here on some more open source. But the interesting thing here is that because we use so much of the Jupyter infrastructure and we use this Jupyter kernel, is that we can support notebooks. It's very easy. Now I'll show you that just very briefly. So if I go back to, let me kill this. Okay, my Docker Spark cluster is still running, I see. Okay, so let's bring up Jupyter Notebook Server. I'm actually not running the kernel gateway, I'm running a notebook server in my Docker container, right? So there's a notebook server running in that Docker container in front of Spark, and all I did was I pointed my browser at it at the appropriate port, and there you have the notebook server. And then what you'll see here is if I look at what I want to create an instance of, there you'll see in the notebooks standard is Python, right? So if I went there, I would have a Python API, the PySpark API into Spark. But now I also have JavaScript, okay? So I can create a new JavaScript notebook, and my canonical little expression here, so var foo equals 5. Oops. Would help if I put a semicolon in there. Okay, so if we now look at the value of foo, right, it's 5. Okay, so I'm now running JavaScript in the notebook. And I have some of the other capabilities of a notebook, so each of these cells, each of the cells is what defines a notebook. So a cell can be evaluated either as code or as something else. So I could actually, I could create text and have it evaluate as Markdown. And so I just have to tell it that this code is going to be Markdown, and then when I evaluate it, right, gets evaluated as Markdown. So I have a lot of the same capabilities. I don't have, say, all of the data widgets, and it's kind of on the, it's entirely possible to have like data widgets and graphs and so forth in here. We've been more concentrating on enabling Node and JavaScript rather than those kind of widgets in the notebook. To be honest, our sort of main motivation with Eclair.js is to enable the expansion of the Node ecosystem to bring Spark into it rather than to sort of further increase the sort of capabilities of notebooks. But that's just the direction we've gone in. Again, it's an open source community. You could have it either way. Okay, so that's my brief foray into notebooks. Just a couple more slides here. Just in terms of deployment, I mentioned at the beginning that there were some advantages of separating out the servers here. Right, so Node and Spark have different scaling characteristics. So if I think about how I might want to deploy these, if I look back to my architectural diagram, the two boxes sort of represent the two sort of server sides. So the Node.js application, clearly that box is the Node.js server, and that has one set of scaling characteristics, right? So if I'm thinking about scaling that out, right, I'm probably more interested in CPU it doesn't need to be particularly fast. I need better network connections. I probably don't need so much disk space. Maybe don't need such fast processors. Whereas at the back end, my second box there, if I want to scale out a Spark cluster, right, I'm probably more interested in more CPU horsepower, you know, large amounts of RAM, certainly large amounts of disk, right. So the characteristics of those two server boxes are markedly different, and so with the architecture we have, I think we've achieved that separation of concerns there. Right, so you could scale each of those independently. It turns out that particular separation is well suited to the cloud. With my only little bit with my IBM hat on, right, in the IBM cloud, you know, we're easily able to deploy this in Bluemix on soft layer. So there is a Node SDK, Node.js SDK available in Bluemix, and you can just do npm install and then require Eclair.js in that in Bluemix, and that just works. And then there are various options for how to set up a Spark cluster, either on soft layer, you know, from scratch, or the IBM analytics for Apache Spark, and you connect to that through WebSockets. So that actually works very well on the cloud, and it would work on Amazon and Azure as well. No doubt about it. So that's my thoughts on deployment there. In terms of performance, we did do a very simple kind of benchmark here. We took the MovieLens data set, and there's some code that goes along with that involve reading in the data sets, doing some filtering, applying some simple map operations, and doing some counts. There are two sizes of data set. There's a smaller one, it's about 3 megabytes with, I think it has 100,000 items in it. And a larger data set with 620 megabytes and about 24 million items in it. Simple test running all this in local mode Spark. And you'll see for the smaller data set, the distinction between Java and JavaScript, in this case, that's Eclair.js. It's pretty much indistinguishable, and Python is significantly more, maybe 10 seconds for that operation, right? So at the small data set size, Java, JavaScript, you know, pretty much indistinguishable in performance. With the larger data set, the disparity grows somewhat. Java is still clearly significantly faster than the Eclair.js solution, but that in turn is much faster than the than PySpark, which is what we used for Python there. And that shouldn't be surprising because we are running everything in JVM. There's no out-of-band crosstalk between the JVM and a Python interpreter, which is what how PySpark operates. It's well performant. Okay, so to wrap up here, so I hope I've shown you that Eclair.js can provide a simple performance solution for bringing Spark into Node applications. We are an open source project. We're on GitHub. You can find us if you go to eclairjs.org. The project is active. It's available under Apache license. And we're looking for contributions, collaborators. People ask me fairly often, actually, when this is going to be part of Spark. I'd love us to be part of Spark, but I'm not willing to take it to Apache, not willing to push to Apache until there's more community and more backing around us. That's one of the rules of Spark. You don't want to toss things over the wall. You really need something that's viable. So we live by that. So that's it from me. Gracias. Merci. Thank you.
You cannot use the microphone for question. If you have one question, we have about 1-2 minutes, no more.
Yes.
And you know, if you're using PySpark, you can declare external modules that can be distributed in the cluster.
Yep.
Is there a similar functionality in Eclair for a credit processing module that can be distributed to a Spark cluster?
Right, so let me play back the question. So the question was if I'm writing Lambda functions or anonymous functions with in PySpark, I can make use of external libraries and modules, which will also run out on the distributed cluster. And so the question is whether that also applies with Eclair.js. So we have some limited capability to do that. If you remember, I said that we're actually parsing it. If you want to use a Spark data type, create a new instance of it, we actually have to pass that class definition out. So we have that mechanism to do that, which is what you need to be able to do, but it's not quite as simple as it is in Python at the moment.
So thank you again.
Got one more question.
One question? Last one?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. You have to give them the microphone. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you much.
Thank you.